You know, I just want to been I've been taking some time to really reflect on my position in this world, and I'm so very grateful because, you know, before I started podcasting and doing this, before we started Unapologetic Live, there was really never another black female conservative to really enter the space. It's wonderful.
Amala, who's that on your computer screen there?
Nobody, nobody. Oh God, nobody, nobody, nobody. Guys, we're going to talk about Jennifer Lawrence and recent comments that she's made stating that she is the first strong female protagonist to have been a lead in a movie. Is this true? We're going to find out. Let's get into it. And we are back, so grateful and blessed to be in the position that I'm in as the first black female conservative podcaster to ever grace the great space that is YouTube.
Break that glass ceiling.
I'm breaking that glass ceiling. Now, of course, we know that that's ridiculous. I'm not the first person to do what I've done, and Jennifer Lawrence is not the first person to do what she's done, but apparently she thinks she is. Now, I want to give her grace and think that maybe this is a slip up, but guys, you watch this clip from Actors on Actors, which is an interview show where they put two actors in front of each other and have them talk about their projects. This one features Jennifer Lawrence, who we know, and Viola Davis, who we also are very familiar with for other reasons. Let's watch.
I remember when I was doing Hunger Games, nobody had ever put a woman in the lead of an action movie because it wouldn't work. We were told girls and boys can both identify with a male lead. But boys cannot identify with a female lead.
Oh, absolutely.
And it just makes me so happy every single time I see a movie come out that just blows through every single one of those beliefs and proves that it is just a lie to keep certain people out of the movies, to keep certain people in the same positions that they've always been in. And it's just amazing to watch it happen and watch you at the helm.
Dun, dun, we're lying.
I love how Viola was just like, stunning
amazing.
And brave. Yes.
Absolutely. That is so true. Yes. Everything you've said. Yes. Now let's really think about this. Jennifer Lawrence just claimed to be the first leading strong female protagonist in a major film. And she said it's never been done before. She had done it in Hunger Games. We were thinking about this and we're like, how many other women have done this before Jennifer Lawrence, before Hunger Games? And let's just go on a short journey into that list. Uma Thurman, Kill Bill, Jodie Foster, Silence of the Lambs, Sigourney Weaver, Alien, all of Charlie's Angels, Demi Moore in G.I. Jane, Angelina Jolie, Tomb Raider, Gillian Anderson, who is Scully in X-Files, Kate Beckinsale from the Underworld series, Mila, Jovovich in Resident Evil, Faye Dunaway in Bonnie and Clyde, Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis in Thelma and Louise. Are we really gonna say there's not been a strong female lead in a movie before Jennifer Lawrence played the protagonist in Hunger Games? Mind you, every single one of those women, a lead in a film and an action film before Jennifer Lawrence did it in Hunger Games.
Someone said we can't leave out Sarah Connor from Terminator. That's Linda Hamilton as well.
Terminator there we 2. Go. There's a bunch. That was a long list, guys. That was a laundry list of women who have been featured as the strong female lead in an action film. But Jennifer Lawrence seems to forget that. Let's play that clip one more time.
I remember when I was doing Hunger Games, nobody had ever put a woman in the lead of an action movie.
Yeah. I'm like, what? And again, I want to give her grace. Maybe it was just a slip up of just this hyperbolic, you know, nobody had ever, it wasn't the norm at the time to be the lead in an action film, which maybe there's some room for argument there that it's not typical for women to be the lead in an action film. I would give you that. But to say that nobody has done it before you've done it.
Right. This is your industry. This is your career. These are you should be the person who knows the most about the history of women in Hollywood, because this is a message and a theme that you champion. It's so important to you, but it just comes off as so ungrateful. Like, no one's ever accomplished anything before me, and just ill-informed and just very tone deaf.
Yeah, I was the one who was willing to come into the space and really take on the mantle, to sit on the mantle for women who wanted to be strong leads in movies. And I did that with Katniss Everdeen. And I say this as a very big fan of Hunger Games, the Hunger Games series, the books. The movie's not as good as the books, of course, but I'm a fan.
I've never seen it.
Fair enough. I tried to watch The Hunger Games with my boyfriend the other night, and we got like 30 minutes in. He's like, this is horrible.
He couldn't relate to a strong female lead.
He could not relate. The man in my life could not relate to the strong female lead.
No. So, do you think she's right about that second part, though, where she said, like, you know, young men can't see themselves in young women leads or whatever it was?
You know, I don't know if that's true. Hunger Games, her series specifically, I think, was enjoyed by people of all walks of life, by boys and girls who were clamoring into the movie theaters to watch those movies as they came out. So I don't know that that's true.
Yeah.
I think it's all about the way that you frame the character itself, because right now we have an issue with people just making strong female leads to say they've made a strong female lead. There's no relatability. There's no hero's journey. You're not really going through a journey with this person of learning who they are, learning what their values are, and then watching them come out of the other end of something that you're rooting for them. You're watching that. For women, they're not really good at writing that for them.
No, and I think that's the issue, is like, I don't need to identify with someone to be able to be entertained by them. If you write a strong female character that is well written and well developed, then I can still be entertained by that as a man. Like, I'm going through the X-Files with my wife right now, and Agent Skelly's awesome. Like, I don't like identify with her, but I'm very entertained by it. And it's an engaging show because it's very well made and she's a sophisticated character that is well developed. And so that in itself keeps my attention. But I think where Hollywood's gotten lately is just, it's a female, so you should love it just because of that. And so we're not gonna go through the trouble of actually having any substantive character development. We're gonna portray them as like a Mary Sue who can do no wrong, who's already smarter than everyone else. And it's just like not good because it's not believable and it's not real, and they don't go through the effort to develop it properly.
Right.
And so of course no one wants to watch that.
And if you don't love her, you're a misogynist and F you, essentially is what they're saying now. And they give they don't trust the audience. They really think the audience is dumb. They can just send you this stuff and force feed it to you and give you what are just cookie cutter versions of every single strong female lead, and that you're just going to accept it and want to watch it. And for some people, that might be true. So for some people who I am very familiar with, all it takes is the word strong female lead and they're in the movie theater to watch it, regardless, just to go like, all praise. I support this message and I support this choice, regardless of whether or not the movie's good.
Which is just like checking your soul at the door. It's like, I'm going to go watch bad content for activism's sake. It's like the movies are supposed to be good and entertaining, so make good movies and earn people's attention.
Right.
But don't shame them or guilt them into watching it, or don't rely on identity politics to motivate people to go see your stuff. Just make good stuff. And, you know, if you have a message, then figure out a way to make a good movie and put that message in there artfully. But like, don't just put a message and then expect that to cover for bad writing, bad acting, bad movies, which is what Hollywood has done lately. Yeah. By the way, someone else said there was a series of Wonder Woman as well that's in like the 60s that
has
been
around
forever.
Which is such an obvious thing. Like, Wonder Woman should be the one she definitely should have thought of. How did we not think of Wonder Woman? It's unbelievable. But now we're in a horrifying epidemic of strong female leads. I feel like I am surrounded by these annoying strong female leads. We thought about this too. What movies are coming out now that are doing this? Woman King, which Viola Davis is in. Wakanda Forever was just a sign of the times as far as the epidemic of strong female characters. She-Hulk, Star Wars with Rey, the Ghostbusters where they did the all-female bunching of the Ghostbusters, Captain Marvel, an upcoming Indiana Jones movie that's now going to be a female Indiana Jones. India Jones, I guess.
Is that what they're calling it, or are you just making that up?
I'm
no.
Just making that
you,
up.
You said it kind of confidently. I was like, okay, yeah, sure. Nothing would surprise me at this
Indiana
point.
Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's becoming really, really formulaic, and this is something we touched on in an episode we did with Gary from Nerdrotic, a very popular YouTube channel that goes over woke Hollywood and all these movies that are coming out. And he doesn't call it MCU, like the Marvel Universe anymore. He calls it MCU because of just how much this has been injected into everything, and I'm over it. And you know who's with us on this? Emily Blunt, who you'll know from many of her films, as well as playing Mary Poppins. She's also married to John Krasinski, who was a star in The Office, played Jim, and is now Jack Ryan. She says, That she is out of a project if she sees three specific words in a script and those words are strong female lead.
Based.
Sometimes you hear that, and of course the feminists are going to hear that and be like, oh, what a self-hating woman. How dare you attack people of your own kind and say that you don't want to see a film with a strong female lead. The Gen Z way of framing this now is calling her a pick-me girl, because a lot of this is seen that if you are against the feminist narrative as a woman, you just are doing so to seek out male validation and to be picked by the male counterpart. So she'll get called a pick-me girl for this. She'll get called misogynistic and a self-hating woman, but she's right. And if anyone knows good writing and probably good producing and directing, it's Emily Blunt and John Krasinski, who have been a couple well invested in the Hollywood infrastructure and have done several projects.
They made The Quiet Place together. Yeah, really good.
Made The Quiet Place together, which got so much heat for featuring a family and a mother who chooses to keep her baby, and they're also armed, which was terrifying.
They must be red pilled. There's a lot of smoke for them being red pilled with all this stuff.
I feel like they are. If you guys have watched A Quiet Place, I feel like that was John Krasinski coming out as a red-pilled conservative.
As much as one can these days
in Hollywood. As much as one can.
Yeah.
As much as one silently can, pun intended, I guess. And yeah, but so what you, a basic thing to say.
Can you blame her? Because, again, I think what this is pointing to is that it's just so overplayed in Hollywood right now that it's like an eye roll for her. It's almost like, you know, when you like are just selected for your gender or your race, it's like it's not on the merit of the script itself. And if you look back in decades prior, like Terminator 2 is one of the most celebrated iconic movies of all time with a strong female lead in Sarah Connor. And it was like it was done very well. But Hollywood has sacrificed that on the altar of sort of new feminist activism instead of, again, writing actually good women characters that people can buy into and be entertained by and like.
Which has been done. Yeah, believe it or not, J-Law.
So she's not pushing back against it on principle. She's pushing back against this new wave of woke feminist writing that is not making good characters and not making good movies. And that, and so I think if she were to write a character with a strong female lead, it'd be great.
And maybe, I don't know, because she stated in the thing, well, whenever I see something that's happening like that, that's what I want to go see. And that shouldn't be the way that you view films. It should just be, it's a good film or it's a bad film. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't need to be gendered. It doesn't need to be racialized. It's either good or it's bad on the merit of what you've seen and what you've watched in the story that's played out before your eyes. And it sucks that that is being lost in entertainment at the behest of people who just want gender this, race that in a movie. And to have Jennifer Lawrence and Viola Davis sit across from each other and have this conversation is just chef's kiss, because Viola Davis, we all know, is the one who put out the movie The Woman King and said, if you guys don't come to the box office to watch my movie, you're proving that black women can't lead in a Hollywood box office, which is just bullying your audience into going to watch your movie. And then you have Jennifer Lawrence, who talks about how she's having all this trouble with her family over political differences because they're too conservative. She stated in her 73 questions with Vogue that she has nightmares about Tucker Carlson. So it's just the perfect pairing of two individuals to come and sit together and talk about essentially their own leftist injection into Hollywood. That's what it is.
They're just so out of touch. But I think the writing's on the wall with this stuff, or at least hopefully. Our friend Nerd Roddick just put out a video this past week that's going viral. It's called Why Woke Hollywood is Failing, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And because people are getting a hold of this message and just like, I don't want this anymore. I don't want to be bullied into watching bad content. I just want good and entertaining movies. And again, we always reference it, but Top Gun Maverick broke so many records in the last year because all they did was go back to great movie making and just making movies that are for everybody that everyone can relate to and be entertained by, and not trying to have all these woke messages in it, but just tell a good story and do it well. Yeah. And that's the bare minimum. And look how it resonated. So, and then meanwhile, the Hollywood themselves are just putting out all these messages that don't resonate with people.
And they're flopping.
Yeah. Like Disney just lost $150 million on that movie.
Strange World.
Yeah. Strange World.
They lost money on Strange World. Yeah. Over $100 million. They lost money on that Buzz Lightyear thing that they were going to feature the gay kiss in. Woman King flopped at the box office. That Froze movie that was about gay couples and being a gay rom-com, that flopped in the box office. There are so many things that they're trying their hardest to inject the narrative into and then just shoving it out to the American public, and the American public is going, whoa. Actually, I want to go see Top Gun Maverick again because I sat down in the movie theater and Tom Cruise popped up on the screen. And even though he's a crazy Scientologist nut, he thanked me for coming to the theater to watch his film. And the last thing that Viola Davis and Jennifer Lawrence are doing is thanking their audience.
No, they're the opposite. They're berating their audience and shaming them if they don't go see it or if they don't support it sufficiently or all the woke narrative. So, yeah, it's total just like entitlement and lack of self-awareness and just being completely out of touch. And I'm glad that these movies are flopping because we're starting to see maybe things are changing. Like Disney just kicked out Bob Chapek for Bob Iger, their previous CEO, and he's promising that they're going to move away from the political messaging and stuff in their in their film. So, which, you know, I'll believe it when I see it, but just hopefully this woke wave is retreating a little bit.
Yeah, and I go to movies now and I'm like, okay, I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting to see it. And sometimes it's just a sprinkle.
And then you're like relieved.
Yeah, right.
Thank God it's only a little bit of horrible wokeness.
Right. Instead of the entire backbone of your story being some sort of like allegory for oppression and the toxicity of men or whatever. Like I went and saw The Menu recently, which I told you guys about, and that movie was good. Little bit of wokeness in there. And I can't say when because it's a spoiler, but little just here and there, just one, two, and I'm like, oh, at least I got out of the movie without three strikes, and that's what I'm looking for now.
Which is so sad. That's where we are. Where it's like, oh, it was good because it was only a little bit of wokeness, but yeah, you know, hopefully we get all the way back to they just make good stuff.
I know. I'm gonna go see that new Knives Out that's coming out in a few days, I believe. So I'm gonna go watch that. Hopefully in theaters around here in LA. I'll let you know how that goes. So. I keep up to date with movies, even though they failed me time and time again. I just cannot get over the experience of going to the movie theater and watching a movie.
Oh, yeah. It's
shouldn't
classic.
Have to. Shouldn't have to. Now, guys, another experience I'm going to have to get over. This is a school that I'm going to, Washington University, St. Louis, or St. Louis. I don't know how you pronounce it, but I'm going to be there Friday night to give a speech. I was supposed to go there last Saturday, ended up getting sick, so I couldn't go, but I'm going this Friday night to go and speak there. And apparently, as is the case with so many college campuses, the leftist students are unhappy, and they showed their lack of happiness on the campus by spray painting the walls with things like Black Trans Lives Matter, which is now currently, I guess, at the cost of the school having to be cleaned off the walls. So thank you for your vandalism, guys. That's always awesome. And all of SU is guilty, saying all of the student union is guilty in this indictment of transphobia and homophobia and racism and misogyny that I'm apparently bringing to the campus. Speak up here. And then this is a collage of trans people who've apparently died of what I do not know, whether or not it's violence or murder of some sort, suicide. I do not know. But a collage of this posted on the campus for me to look at as I return, and it hears protect Black trans lives. So obviously a lot of students have a problem with me coming to this school, and they're calling me a transphobe and all these different things, and are apparently going to stage a protest on Friday that I will be present for. So that'll be fun. And I'm going to do, it's funny enough, I went to Winona State University, WSU, which is the same acronym for this school, WSU. So I'm going to another WSU to be protested by WSU students, and I'm going to have to walk up to them again and say, hey guys, I swear I don't buy, and I'm not some scary transphobe, racist, homophobic, misogynist, whatever word you want to throw at me. Do you want to have a conversation? And we're going to see how that goes.
I got mad when I saw this article because it's basically slander. They're basically saying that you are indirectly responsible for violence against Black trans women.
Yeah.
and on no basis whatsoever, that no evidence provided for that. And it's just particularly ironic because literally a week ago, we sat down for 2 hours on this show with a black trans woman, and had a civil discussion that was very friendly, that they could go back and look, but they can't be bothered to do the 10 seconds of research that it would take to see that. It's so disingenuous and like can't be taken seriously at all. And it's beyond that. It's not just like something to dismiss. It's something that I'm like, this is unacceptable to accuse you of violence or of being responsible for that. That is disgusting and slanderous.
And it's just on what authority? And I know what the argument that's going to be made. The words that you say are invalidating to the trans experience and therefore lead to some sort of violence against the trans community or their own proliferation of their own mental issues that lead to attempted suicide or successful suicide. So the argument is already etched in stone because it never changes. It's the same thing that they throw at you every single time. And I know that that's not true. I know that what they're saying is completely baseless. It's unfounded. It is false. I'm waiting for that to be recognized on their side of things. So like I do at every single campus, I'm going to show up, I'm going to do my speech, and I'm going to invite them to the front of the Q&A line. Are they going to be there? Hopefully, because they're feeling pretty antagonistic when it comes to spray paint. When I went to Winona State University, the students were feeling really antagonistic when it came to chalk and writing in chalk on the campus, yet did not show up for the Q&A period of the speech. So it seems to be a running theme of we write our messages out like children and make a very big slanderous accusation with your name directly attached to it, and then we don't show up to confront you on the basis of anything that you've said. So hopefully this changes on this campus in particular. And every time I go into these campuses, I'm like, oh, I've got a whole speech set up or whatever. And then the protests start, and I'm like, okay, well, now the speech is going to be about this.
Yeah.
Here we go.
How sad is it that you literally have to make their argument for them? Because they're doing all this and acting out like petulant children, spray painting, vandalizing their own campus, cost which I guess they're paying for with their own student loan money or tuition.
I bet none of them are paying to clean this up.
Yeah, no, of course not out of their own pockets, but even so, you know, it's always taken for granted that whenever you go give a speech somewhere, that they can come first in line for Q&A and offer their argument, challenge you, and use their words like an adult, because you're an adult and an intelligent student who can make arguments and use your speech to make their case and challenge you and call you out while you're wrong. But instead, despite that door being wide open, they just immediately go to slander and vandalizing their own campus and making this big fuss. And it's very childish and I don't know, I'm getting angry just thinking about it.
But we'll be there and I'm still showing up. It's you cannot scare me out of not coming to one of these things. I will be here and I will be there to say what I need to say. You know, a lot of people see this and they go, oh, well, that's kind of scary. People are putting all these messages for you or whatever. It's always the most cowardly people who engage with people who they disagree with like this. It is the most cowardly individuals. So hopefully maybe some of them see this and they actually show up. I know they've been searching through my YouTube videos like Media Matters, trying to find clips of me saying things that they can either take in context or out of context to come at me during this Q&A. So I'm ready for it, baby. I am the scariest 22-year-old female in America, apparently, because all these universities have such a large reaction to my presence. But it's par for the course. It's unfortunate that this is a sad sign of the times as far as what education looks like in America, that you can't actually have a speaker come to your campus and just say what they think anymore without it being met with something like this. Now let's move on to this interesting poll. Just a few fun things that I saw on Twitter that I feel like could open us up for discussion. This is a popular YouTuber by the name of Mr. Beast. I love how they say popular YouTuber as if he is not the owner of YouTube, basically. Yeah. But Mr. Beast has asked this question on his Twitter, and I'll pull up the actual tweet here. He says, if somebody offered you $10,000, but if you take it, a random person on Earth dies, would you take the $10,000? Now, when I first saw this question, I thought, okay, $10,000 is not that much money at all. That would be unbelievable if somebody said yes to this $10,000 question. Now, of course, $10,000, if that was just dropped in your lap, that could change the game for probably most Americans in today's day and age. But if you're going to kill somebody, a random person on the earth is going to die if you take the $10,000. Let's look at the answers here. This got nearly 2 million votes, and 44% of people said yes. 44.5% of people said yes. That's a lot of people. As of 7 hours ago, the people that voted yes killed over 833,000 people and made about a little over $8 billion.
There you go. I mean, okay, first off, would you vote yes on this?
I voted no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you did
as
vote
you
no.
As you guys can see. Yeah, there no.
You got the receipts.
Absolutely not. No. Imagine if I had voted yes and I'm like here talking about it as if I hadn't. And the screen just says yes.
That's like there was a journalist like a week or two ago who like tweeted some like threats that he was getting in his DMs or whatever, but it was like a note and like you could see the cursor of him typing the threat. and it was like, dude, are you serious? We could all see this. But
that's so funny.
If you vote yes for this, you're implicitly saying that $10,000 is in my pocket is worth more than another
human
human's
life. Dude, which, you know what? I can't say that I'm super shocked by what has popped up here, because I feel like you could put out something on Twitter, like, if you could get a Klondike bar right now, but one person across the earth would die from you getting the Klondike bar, a bunch of people would say yes.
Right.
But that's just like...
But this is a... I mean, that's... How many votes are on it? Like almost 2 million votes.
2 million votes.
So you're talking about a scale that's like a few trolls would be corrected for at that scale. Now, we just did this same poll in the Unapologetic YouTube live chat right now. So 77% of you are saying, no, you would not take the $10,000. And only 23% would take it. So you guys are a little more ethical.
What are 23% of you doing? Yeah.
Like, what's the justification? It's like people are like, oh, life is hard right now, but that's not a justification to kill somebody. And you don't get to choose. I mean, you don't get to choose according to the way this question is asked. Like, is it somebody who's, you know, in a coma, or is it somebody who's terminally ill already?
You have no idea.
Yeah, you cannot choose. It's a random person.
It's a rando.
And it doesn't matter like how much you need that money. You don't have the right to take someone's life. And I guarantee you, so many of you that voted 23% are pro-life advocates.
That's an interesting thing. Yeah, I saw Michaela Peterson said the results of this are extremely disturbing. And then Wilfred Riley, who we've had on the show as well, said they aren't surprising at all, to be honest. Most humans value a stranger's life in an unknown or enemy state at very little. I'm frankly glad and surprised to see that the mean is over the 10K. We can dislike that in some moral sense, but it isn't shocking. Everyone intuitively knows it. And when I read that, I was like, you know what? That makes total sense. You know, when you talk to people about a tragedy that's happening in a different country or other things that are going on where people are dying or there's poverty or hunger, it's very difficult to be in a state of attachment to people who are that far away from you, especially in a randomized sense. So imagine offering somebody $10,000 and being like a person who you already don't care about and you're already unattached to is going to die if you take this $10,000. They'd probably take it.
Right. But it speaks also to not just a detachment from like, you know, other human beings suffering that you can't see, but a detachment from your own principles, because you're being asked this question in principle and in the abstract.
Yeah.
And so that's what's concerning to me is that it's not about like you're in this life and death situation or you know, it's like, I'm going to kill you if you don't answer this question right. It's literally like, no, in principle, do you agree to this idea that, you know, you would take another human, a random human being's life in exchange for $10,000?
And they're like, just like,
yup. Sign me up.
Dude.
So yeah, I disagree with Wilfred on that.
That is wild. Somebody should have made a meme of like Bill Gates looking at this and he's just like smiling. Bill Gates would totally take people up on this offer freaking to depopulate the world. Isn't that his whole thing?
Yeah, and then freaking Canada's all on that assisted suicide stuff right now. Have you heard about that?
No. You know what? We can talk about this, though. I don't know that I'm anti-assisted suicide. Are you anti-assisted suicide?
In principle, I'd have to think about this more thoroughly. But what I've seen is, like, they're literally having television ads for like, hey, you can kill yourself early. And they're like, it's like the intent behind it is it's expensive to care for people in our social welfare system.
See,
and we're trying to reduce the population and trying to normalize this, like, you know, kill yourself energy. And I don't like
energy.
That.
We're trying to manifest kill yourself energy, which the internet is manifesting kill yourself energy on its own. I can't tell you how many people have either A, asked me to kill myself, or B, I've seen on social media just like joking about killing themselves. It's quite a big trend right now to just joke about offing yourself, which I'm sure you guys are all privy to. You all know that. But as far as assisted suicide, I have to think about this. I don't like the framing of just like, life's expensive. Kill yourself so the government can have more money.
Right.
But if you have a person who is, I don't know, chronically ill or is suffering with something that they don't want to deal with, and they are making the personal choice of, I would like to end my life on my own terms without the pain and agony of going down the natural route of things, I'm sympathetic to that person. I do think if it was something that was going to be instated or allowed, it would have to be a part of a, hopefully, a longer term process. Then it shouldn't be on demand like in Futurama. Have you seen Futurama?
I haven't, no.
They have like suicide telephone booths where you like walk in and you just can kill yourself. It's a cartoon, guys. It's a cartoon.
That's so dark.
Well, it is an adult cartoon, but I think if you're going to allow it, it should be some sort of a process. But the basis of it is, who am I to tell somebody that they can't end their own life if they want to, you know?
Right. And
yeah.
So in those situations, I would agree. I can't remember what it was, but I read an article about this, and they were talking about like, it was like a young man who, you know, was disaffected, had a lot of, you know, just personal failures in his life, and couldn't get his stuff together, and had mental issues and stuff like that, but was mostly just depressed and, you know, despairing of life, and in a deep state of despair about his life, and went down this path that was available to him through Canada's laws of, hey, I want to kill myself. And as like a young, you know, otherwise healthy young man who's just in a lot of turmoil.
To
me, it kind of follows the same logic of the gender dysphoria argument and childhood transitioning, to where if you're, you know, you have this subjective feelings based, like, hey, I have this justification for wanting this medical intervention. And that, you know, we talk about how like Europe has made that an absolute last resort for medical transitioning of children or anything like that, or medical transition in general for the gender dysphoria. And so I think that, you know, the idea that there's an easy path, or, you know, that there's not extreme psychological vetting on the path before somebody would do something like this, that's where I would say it needs extreme caution. But I do understand the like die with dignity argument, and I'm sympathetic to that. But
totally.
I'm skeptical of, you know, how much this is being promoted in Canada right now. It's kind of scary.
Weird thing to like have a commercial ad for, you know, where it's like the guy running on the beach in slow motion, like all those big pharma ads, and it's running where too? I guess his inevitable demise.
And maybe we can look back into this more deeply, but I just pulled up this headline from National Post. Woman featured in pro-euthanasia commercial wanted to live, say friends. So, yikes.
So it looks like we're in some murky territory. Yeah. Murky waters.
Which is like one of those, it's like the death penalty. It's like you don't want to make mistakes with this type of stuff because it's literally permanent. And so
I saw this country, I forget what country in Europe, was creating these like suicide pods. Have you seen those? It's like a pod that you can 3D print essentially, but these other people had invented, and you set yourself in whatever environment that you want to die in. And at your own choice, at any time, you can kill yourself. I think the thing deprives you of oxygen or something, or fills with, I don't know,
carbon monoxide or something.
Maybe something to that effect. It kills you in a way that is less painful than other forms of suicide that people have. But you can 3D print this pod at home to do this for yourself. So interesting.
Yeah, I'm not on board with that.
I'm just so far removed from anything that would have to do with ending your own life that I don't know what to say about it. And if there's somebody, especially the people who are like, I've got this illness thing going on, or I have this affliction, I would just like to, you know, go out on my own terms. I don't want to go out babbling or not remembering my family or things like that. I am totally, you know, sympathetic to all sorts of pain and anguish that people go through when they want to end their lives. I would just love to think about alternatives before we go down the route of assisted suicide.
Yeah, my last thought on this is, you know, we talk about first principles and stuff, and I can't help but just think of, you know, like, I'm sympathetic to the idea that people can be in extreme anguish. And there is a, like, when someone's going to die anyway, and that's abundantly clear, like, that's one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But the, you know, I when my first principle comes from, like, you know, people are made in the image of God, and, like, thou shalt not kill. And that, to me, that includes yourself. And so I don't think that you have the right to take your own life in that, in like a, in a moral first principle sense.
We'll have to get into that in a
yeah, I just opened up a whole other can of worms. But to me, that's like the, as you know, speaking as a Christian, that's kind of where I land on that, like, moral question.
And that would make sense why I maybe am on the outside of that argument. Yeah, well, let us know if you want us to do an episode talking more in depth about this, because it certainly is an interesting thing, and it's a phenomenon that seems to be growing, and an idea that seems to be being fostered in today's day and age. Another thing that's being fostered, which is way different than assisted suicide, is Botox, fillers, and cosmetic surgery. Candace Owens sent a ripple through the internet, and especially on Twitter, when she tweeted out this serious question for men. Do you think that the Botox / filler fake lips look is attractive? Do you envision long-term relationships with girls that look that way? Male opinions only, please. Working on a show about social media mutating our appetites. Now, as you can imagine, this male opinions only, please part did not work. And a lot of females gave their opinion to what Candace had to say. But of course, a lot of men came in too. And men were saying, absolutely not. Disgusting. I don't want to date a woman that looks like that. Would never date a woman who doesn't love herself naturally and all this stuff. And of course, it's, that is the thing to say. It is the response to have to a question like this. And you had the sprinkling in of men who said, I don't care, do whatever you want. Or, and then the other men who said, I find this attractive. But women came in and basically had the retort that men wouldn't know what Botox and filler looks like if they got injected with it themselves. And they have no idea what they're commenting on when they say they don't like women who have this done. They only know the extreme versions of it, the Kardashian or Karkrashian, as I like to call it, effect of filler and Botox on the face.
What are you looking at me for?
Taylor, do you, what are your thoughts? You're a male opinions only.
To answer her question.
Yeah.
Well, okay, the Botox filler fake lips look, is that attractive? No, because if it's by definition a Botox fake lips look, that's distinctly obvious that you have fake lips, then no, that's not attractive. That's overdone. But can someone tastefully or use, you know, cosmetic surgery to improve their appearance? Yes, of course. In the same way that you can use makeup to improve your appearance or exercise or whatever else it may be. That's another tool in the tool belt to improve your physical appearance to, you know, be your best self. But is it easy to overdo it, especially when cosmetics are involved, a cosmetic surgery? Absolutely. And so that's the one you would want to avoid doing.
I see some women who get it done to the fullest extent. I mean, so much so that y'all don't look like you were born women anymore, if you know what I'm saying. Not to be rude, but it's very, like, you can get a touch of that stuff and just go too far after receiving it for the first time. But I do think, especially here in LA, there's a lot of girls running around with all types of Botox and filler in their face, and you would have no idea. You would have no clue. You would not be able to tell. They go to the top of the top, get this done, or get it done very minimally. There's girls that I'm friends with who have Botox and filler, would have never known had they not told me. So
yeah, it's totally
a fine line. If you were dating somebody, okay,
yeah,
and you're like, this woman, your wife, for example, your like, wife, okay, but you're with your wife, right? And she turns to you and she goes, Taylor, on our 1 year anniversary, I really want to say something to you. And you're like, yeah. And she's like, I get a lot of filler and a lot of Botox.
Oh, wow.
And you have no idea that this is not what my face naturally looks like, but you couldn't tell that she had Botox and filler. Does that change the way you view her? Does it change the dynamic of the relationship? Or is it just like, oh, that's cool?
As far as her appearance is concerned, it's like, oh, as far as the lying to me for years and not letting me just know the truth, that's the part that's concerning. It's the it's the lack of honesty about something about yourself, and you felt the need to lie or that you hid something from me. It's not how that's affected your appearance. It's
okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay. So she could have lied about anything. The fact that it is Botox and filler doesn't affect you either.
Exactly.
You're just like, oh, okay,
right.
It's fine.
Yeah, I think so.
Interesting. Yeah, I feel like I don't know. I think I can't speak for my boyfriend here, but I think he would have a different reaction to that. He's very much anti getting anything done to the face, wants everything to be kept natural, anti makeup, even everything. So, and I think there are probably some men in that camp as well, just like, why are you messing with what you have? Don't mess with it. Keep it natural. But again, a lot of men don't know it. Like, they'll be like, I love natural women who don't wear makeup. And I'm like, who's your example of a natural woman who doesn't wear makeup? And they're like, Madison Beer.
Alicia Keys.
Alicia Keys. Yeah. Emily Ratajkowski.
Yeah.
They're like, that's my example. And for those of you who don't know what, like, Madison Beer looks like, she's a stunner. They're like, that's my view of a woman with natural, no makeup. Looks good. Which is what so many men say.
Which, by the way, we shouldn't forget. You should pull. Did you see that picture of Simon Cowell that just came out? Because men can overdo it on the cosmetic surgery too.
And Zac Efron.
He did it too.
Zac Efron.
Oh lordy.
Hold on. There's this girl on YouTube who kind of goes through and dispels like what celebrities are doing with their face and just details it. So that's what Zac Efron looks like now.
That's just.
It happens to all of us.
It's just, you know, take. Just age, man. It's okay. You know, we all know you're older.
But it's like, I get it. Okay, if you're dealing with an insecurity your entire life, right? And somebody goes, I can fix that for 5K, and you have 5K, a lot of people would be like, yeah, go ahead and fix it.
Right, but that's not fixing it when you come out looking like, I mean, I guess it's not that bad.
It's all about the result.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like when people are like, oh, I'm so ugly. Look at all these celebrities. You're not ugly. You're poor.
Yeah.
I'm not ugly. I just don't have money. For that.
Yeah, you ever seen those like Kardashian before and after pictures? And that's the meme. It's like you're
freaking.
You ain't ugly, you just broke.
I know. Bella Hadid, who is now called the most beautiful woman in the world. Do you know how much work she's had done to her face? And she's gorgeous. But gorgeous because she got a bunch of work done to her face. So there's a lot to the conversation. I'm not anti people getting stuff done. Although if a friend came to me and was like, I'm looking at getting this and this and this procedure done, I'd be like, you sure you want to do that? Maybe we could slow down. Maybe we could, you know, work on accepting what you got going on rather than injecting yourself. But I wear makeup. So who am I to talk?
Mm.
I do cosmetic changes to my face every single day. And it's all about this. So, you know, It's where do you draw the line, right? Is injections where you draw the line? Is it going
surgery.
Underneath? Is it surgery where you draw the line? Is brushing your hair in the morning where you draw the line? Straightening your hair when it's actually curly? Getting braids when your hair is curly? It's just like, at what point have you gone into a cosmetic realm that is too much?
I just asked you guys in the chat, by the way, would you be okay with cosmetic surgery for your significant other so far? 70% of you say no, 30% say yes.
Wow.
So, not having
a lot
it.
Of natural baddies out there. Love it. Love that for you. It's such a normal thing in LA that I forget what real people look like.
Yeah, that's true.
It's so wild. You go to a bar in LA and you look at these girls and you're just, it's like in being in an alien city because they do not look human. I mean, they're all airbrushed. The nose is swooped. The lips are pouty. The eyes are big. The lashes are all fake and done. The hair is dyed at whatever. The boobs are done. Everything is done. Like literally,
they all have real life Instagram filters applied and editing.
Yo, straight up. Straight up.
It's crazy. I mean, when you think about it, LA's like, if you're the prettiest girl in your school, you're going to go into modeling or acting or whatever, and that's probably going to land you in a place like here.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get here, and then everyone else who's the prettiest girl from their school is here as well. And then you go into the cosmetic stuff. And to me, that explains like why you get this concentration of, you know, not only beautiful people, but beautiful people who also go that extra step with all the like enhancements and stuff.
Yeah. Business is booming, y'all.
Mm.
And I can't say, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe when I'm 50, I'll want Botox. So who knows? Maybe
I don't judge.
Maybe the ages.
I mean, should we have what is it? The basic lighting in here that doesn't, you know, take away any wrinkles or stuff like that?
Right,
is
right.
That, is that cosmetic lighting? Should we not
because
be able to edit our pictures?
My lighting is working real hard right now.
Shout out to Scott.
Thank you, Scott. We appreciate you. But yeah, something to think about, and it's not something that I normally think about is cosmetic changes other than the makeup that I do in the morning. But you guys seem to feel pretty strongly about it. 68% of you said no for your significant other, while 32% of you said yeah, I'll let it be. Somebody said you won't need Botox, you're black.
I saw that. I almost read it. I'm like, I'm going to let her read it. She wants to.
I don't think that half of my genetics is working. Your girl has like little smile lines. And if I raise my eyebrows.
Oh my gosh.
You see this? Now, right now, because I'm 22.
You're 22. Talk to me in 10 years.
I'm selling chocolates. I'm going to look like the
What's
chocolate.
What's he selling?
Lady. What does she look like again? The chocolate lady from Sponge. Oh, why can I not spell SpongeBob? From SpongeBob. Heck yeah, that's me. selling chocolates.
Oh no.
I can't even do the voice. That is gonna be me, y'all. But anyways, for the time being, no cosmetic surgery for me. I don't have much to say about any of these things anymore. Jennifer,
what's the youngest acceptable age for cosmetic surgery? I mean, I guess it's like if you
break your nose or something.
Yeah, or like have a cleft palate or something like that.
Cleft palate.
Yeah,
I guess it's always the infant. We'll always find things that are acceptable to us at any, you know, given time if you can find the situation that warrants it. As far as just like all out, I just want a cosmetic change, no other reason. I guess that's 18.
You'd have to be consistent with our thoughts on like transition surgery. I guess you'd have to.
Yeah, you have to be 18.
Be consistent, yeah.
Yeah, 18, because that's, yeah, transition surgery is just cosmetic. That's really
an adult.
All that
you
is.
Have to be an adult.
Yeah,
I
you
guess.
Have to be an adult. Braces are cosmetic. We give those to kids all the time. So it's all about, there's so many different things that we do that are cosmetic changes to ourselves that people don't necessarily see as being as taboo as plastic surgery is. So I wish, the one thing I wish is that everybody was just transparent about stuff that they got done. Just like be real about it. When Kim K posts an Instagram photo and suddenly she's 40 pounds lighter than she was in the last week, she should talk about the injections that she's taking and the medication that she's taking and the surgeries that she's getting, rather than putting off this false persona of just body morphing, I guess, at this point. And it's probably to the detriment of so many young girls. I can imagine, you know, because I was young when social media was being injected into the culture, and I was maybe in middle school starting to get on social media. So imagine going through that now as a young person and just being constantly surrounded by social media.
Yeah. I'm terrified of the idea of like raising a teenage daughter. That's
yeah.
A crazy thought, especially like how bad it is now versus later. But the onus, I guess, becomes on you as parents in your household to like tell your kid, hey, this is all fake and don't compare yourself to this.
Right.
But like that really has to be driven home because that messaging from culture is going to be constant and from their peers and all that. So,
yep.
But you mentioned Kim Kardashian. We just did that episode on Liver King this week about his whole, you know, my natural diet is what's making me this ripped.
Yeah.
And he was on cosmetic steroids.
Just as hard out there for the men, I guess. I saw Joe Rogan just called out The Rock too and said that he's taking steroids.
Yeah.
And now that's going to be a whole thing. So we'll see which. Look at him. The man is a walking human thumb, basically.
And he's like getting up there too. Like it's, you can't be maintain that level of muscularity.
You don't think he's roided out, guys. Mm. Come on. Anyways, okay.
Super chats.
From Matthew, thank you for your super chat. For me, it kind of feels women learning all those male skills. They kind of unlearn what they are really good at. It frightens me. Ah, okay. I see what you're saying. So you're saying that women are taking on sort of this male role, and now they're unlearning what women do naturally or have in their natural traits. And in a lot of ways, it's true. I don't know if they're unlearning it. They're just rejecting it, which is your choice to do, and you can do that. Hopefully it makes you happy, though.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're waiting to see. Monica Kyla, I always say your name wrong. Why leftist liberals, woke people are vegetarians and vegans? Do they care about animal rights or climate, or is it identity politics and virtue signaling? I don't have an answer for that. I don't know.
I mean, it's hard to answer that without having to make like a sweeping generalization and reading into people's motives, neither of which we like to do.
Yeah. I'm super sympathetic to people who don't eat meat and are vegetarians or whatever. I think, if that's something you want to do and you don't want to be responsible, I guess, for what's happening in the food industry right now, I think that's valid. Like, I never look at people and think like, oh, it's crazy that you don't eat meat. Like, that's so weird. I went through a whole like vegetarian, vegan stage when I was way, way younger and teenager, but, which was yesterday. But yeah, I don't look down on people that do that thing, especially with how our meat is produced now, largely. Like, if you're going to the grocery store and buying meat, it's probably brought to you in some sort of effed up way.
Yeah, and I'd say people on the left are generally more, higher in whatever psychological traits that are like lead to empathy. And so I imagine that could extend to the animal cruelty argument. And then I think that there's also people on the left buy into these sort of catastrophized narratives around climate change more readily. And so I think that that would, you know, a lot of reasons people go vegetarian or vegan is for climate arguments. And so I think that those two factors, I think, would play into why that'd be like, it would skew left for people who choose not to eat meat.
Definitely. Next super chat from Chelsea. Thank you so much for your super chat. Assisted suicide is a no-go. That's basically telling a suicidal person, oh, this is completely okay. Suicide is not okay. It hurts not only the person who does it, but the people around them too. As a suicide survivor, this idea is so disgusting. So it's interesting to hear it from somebody who has attempted suicide themselves. I have to think about this because you have assisted suicide and you have suicide. Both exist whether or not we like them to exist or not. Now, when we're talking about assisted suicide specifically, the examples that I gave were more in line with medical problems. I mean, people who are going to be on ventilators, all this different stuff, and don't want to have to live through that reality and want a way out of that. As far as a depressed person who is seeking out suicide, I don't know what that would look like. I mean, clinically, I have no idea what that would look like. I would hope that there would be a massive, massive process and a long-term process, just like we were saying, it happens in Europe with medical transitioning for children of, can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this? What are all the ways we can do to get you off the track that you've chosen for yourself at this current point in time? But unfortunately, just suicide is a reality, whether or not we like it, whether or not we think it's a good thing, whether or not we think it's a bad thing, it is something that happens. So what conditions do we create for a conversation surrounding that? And what conditions do we create for the people who do ultimately make that choice? Because they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in my position clear. That argument reminds me of like the, San Francisco's efforts to like, let's provide people who take drugs with clean needles because they're going to be doing it anyway. I guess there's a lot of gray area there of like how much we, make it easier for people to do things that are, harmful to themselves just because they're going to do it anyway. But,
easier is I don't know if I would say easier is the word, but I mean like I would want the process to be extensive.
And I think that's my problem is like creating any path sort of legitimizes this idea that violates a moral, first principle of mine, which would be that your life is sacred and you have a duty to press through whatever you face in life and not take your own life. That's because you are created in God's image and you don't have the right to take your own life because you didn't give yourself your life. And I know that I don't have a non-religious grounded answer
That.
And so I get in a secular society why, that would be tough to make the basis of a law. But, as far as my personal opinion on the matter, I can't go beyond that.
Yeah, fair enough. Last super chat here is from Sup My Dude. If you rearrange the body parts of a Barbie doll, is that technically plastic surgery?
Bad joke. I love it.
That is a joke that Taylor would make.
It's kind of tough to go from like assisted suicide to like silly joke about that, but well done. Thanks for the transition, getting us out of that tough conversation.
We need some comedic relief, I guess, guys. Oh, my goodness. Anyways, That is our Super Chats for today's show. Guys, I hope you enjoyed some interesting topics today. Let us know how you feel about Jennifer Lawrence's comments, whether or not you would take $10,000 if it meant a random person dies across the earth, and how you feel about Botox and filler, especially if you're a man. We want male opinions only. Just kidding. Anybody from any walk of life can comment down below. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Guys, thank you so much for watching. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single time we go live. That is Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and we post videos every single day. Also, if you'd like to talk to us outside of the show, join the Discord. It's in the link in the description down below. We would love to have you. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next time. Bye.